Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warning, this podcast discusses addiction, mental health, and other sensitive topics. Please listen with care and take a break if needed. You are not alone, and support is available.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Malfunction Junction.
Thank you for joining us.
This is Andrew.
This is Jay.
How's everybody doing today? Jay, how are you doing today?
I'm getting through it, brother.
It's getting been a good day.
Yeah, how about yourself?
I would qualify it around the same level as getting through it.
One of them days.
It has been one of them days. It's not the worst day of my life, but it's also, it's been just kind of an average day. Yeah. Average week as well, honestly. Actually, no, that's not true. It was not an average week.
No way.
I should say more. So, this week we was, and we will, hence the episode today, we're going to be talking about psychedelics and recovery. I celebrated Bicycle Day this year.
Oh boy.
And we'll get more into that a little bit more, because I will tell the story, for the Clean But Still a Mess episode. But I, a little bit of teaser in there for y'all. Bicycle Day explanation coming up, and then I went to, I also got to go to the Nuggets playoff game.
They won?
No, they lost game two that I went to.
Dog shit, go for it.
They won game one though. 1-1. I don't know what the, I think they're playing, I think they might be playing right now. Wednesday as we're recording today. They lost the game that I went to, and that was sad. It was very anticlimactic. They came down to the last second and they lost, and it just sucked. But
the walk out of the game stadium was awesome. Is horrific.
The worst.
I mean, you, in your home stadium, walking out with just 28,000 other people, everybody but hurt.
Yes.
It's at least a nice little blast of commiseration after something shitty. Better than sitting on your own couch and just sitting there fuming. You know, at least you got other people bitching about the experience.
Hey, it's exactly true. That is, you, and if you win, it's great, I'm sure. I mean, I don't know what it's like for a playoff game. This is the first playoff game I'd ever been to of any sort.
I still haven't been to one yet.
It was awesome. Cool. The atmosphere in the stadium was, like, unbeatable. Like, it was going crazy. But, unfortunately, they lost. So yeah, that was my week. At least the one of the high points of my week, going to that game for the first time. That was pretty cool. I'm not even a Nuggets fan, but it was still pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a hometown. You know what I mean? Even if you're not a fan, there's still that experience of being part of that, like, buzz.
Yeah,
it's one of the more enjoyable things.
Being in the town of where the event is taking place, right?
You know? Yeah. Thank you for explaining what hometown means, you asshole.
Well, I'm not from here. I am not from here.
But this is the hometown team. Not your hometown. Okay. It's still the hometown team.
My hometown team. My hometown team is the Sacramento Kings, baby. Let's go.
That's disgusting.
Sac Kings. Let's go. Yeah, I grew up out there.
I couldn't tell you a single statistic, fact, or anything about this. Have they won a...
Dog, until 2 years ago, they hadn't been to the playoffs in 18 seasons.
That's nutty.
Yeah. But we're back.
They are basketball, yeah.
They're basketball, yes.
Yeah, see, I didn't even know.
Yeah. That's the only show in Sacramento. They're potentially getting a Major League Baseball team. Right now, that's where the A's are playing, because the A's are moving to Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. The A's are playing in Sacramento right now. Wow, they're building a stadium down in Vegas. And a potentially Sacramento will be vying for a Major League team after
that. Are the A's Oakland's old team?
They were Oakland, yes. Okay, Oakland. Okay. Now they're just the Athletics. Yeah. They will be the Las Vegas Athletics at some point, but they're not going to be the Las Vegas Athletics while they're in Sacramento.
What a fucking retarded team name. The Athletics. The Athletics.
It's like from the 1870s.
1880s. Yeah, I mean, that tracks.
Yeah.
They're all malnourished and fucking...
Yeah, it was originally the Philadelphia Athletics, I believe. It might even be something else. No, I think it was Philadelphia.
I was literally going to say, it would be like a Philadelphia golf team. You hit me with that.
Literally, yeah.
Tough, dog.
That's tough.
Yeah, shout out to the people in Delco, okay?
Yeah.
All the people in Philly. Go get it.
Go all get them.
Right. Let's hit this listener question, baby.
Listener questions. We're going to start off here with a question from Sawyer in Minnesota.
Shout out.
He says, I've been in recovery for a little over a year now, and I've been doing pretty well with traditional methods, meetings, therapy, the whole deal. But lately, I keep hearing about people using psychedelics like psilocybin or ayahuasca for trauma and addiction healing. Some say it helped them break through the blocks that nothing else could. I'm curious, but also hesitant. Is this something that can actually be a part of recovery, or is it just another way to justify getting high? And again, that's from Sawyer in Minnesota. Shout out. I'm glad that we are talking about this because I have a lot to say about this personally. I think that it can actually be a part of recovery, and I don't think that it's just something to get high. I think that you can do that, but that's with anything. I think, and I have seen people do that. But I also, I would even qualify myself as having done that, actually. Having lived, like, thinking, like, oh, these are the answer, and, like, these are going to make me heal. And, like, it may be in some way, but you got to do the work around it, too. Maybe you're shown something in the trip, right? Something is revealed as a thought and a pattern in your brain in the trip. But it doesn't make it, unless you go ahead and move that forward into your life and you say, oh, I do this in a negative way, and it has a negative outcome on my life. Unless you then stop doing that, then you just know that that's bad for you.
Mm-hmm. And I think it depends on the substance, too. There are certain substances. We'll get a little more into the studies and some of the data on it in a minute here, but... there are certain substances like ibogaine, which have been shown, which single trips kind of almost immediately stopping certain types of addictive behaviors and helping people almost, again, immediately change their processes. But with other substances that are a little more mild, like, say, psilocybin, some of these studies are typically most apt, at least in terms of efficacy, with repeated use under the advisement of, you know, like a clinical professional and doing multiple treatment sessions, right? Ketamine is another one like this, which, again, we'll get into some of the data on. And so it's the repeated where it's an active, ongoing process of work. I think, pertinent to this question, one of the most important things you can ask yourself, at least from what I've seen, and Andrew, I don't know if you'd agree with this, but I think that one of the more worrying parts about some of the psychedelic use with somebody who's in recovery is what type of circles you have to go back on in order to start accessing those types of things. So, like, for me, the people I knew who were around the psychedelic community were also the people who were still drinking and still smoking. And so if it leads you back to people where you're kind of, the people that you were using with in the past, you may end up putting yourself in a situation where you're around the wrong things, where it's kind of unrelated to the drug. But if you're not in a state that allows you to have some sort of oversight, or guidance on the process, you may end up finding yourself in communities again that aren't as supportive of you being, you know, sober outside of the psychedelic usage.
Right, absolutely. And I will comment on ibogaine. I have a friend who went down to Mexico to take ibogaine. Mm-hmm. Actually, this was a couple years back when I first started getting sober. And I won't mention his name because I'm sure that he probably would like his identity concealed. sure. as he does own a rather successful business down in Austin now. He's the man. I would shout you out, but I will keep you there.
We'll shout you out in spirit, buddy.
Yes, absolutely. But a good friend of mine, and he went down to Mexico to do Ibogaine, and he told me that he was a heroin guy, heroin and crack, and he said that when he came back from doing it, he tried heroin one more time after that, and it just didn't scratch the same itch, he said. And so it clearly does something. Right. It clearly does. I mean, that's only a testimonial that I have, but it's like it seems to do something to people's pathways in their brain of addiction to these really harmful things.
Yeah, I mean, that's been a kind of reported, at least anecdotal,
right.
Claim about it. And I mean, I've heard very similar things, and there have been some studies. I wish I had pulled these up beforehand, but I have seen studies in the past too with, like, you know, psilocybin doing that with cigarette addiction.
Yeah.
And so just kind of this immediate change in how the brain reacts to, like, its nicotinic receptors. So, you know, very well could be the same thing with just harder substances, being that, at least as far as my knowledge goes, Iboga is a far more intense
mm-hmm. From what I understand, trip. Too.
Yeah.
I've never done that one in particular, but I, from what I understand, yeah. It's a very intense experience.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's... I mean, getting back to the idea that... I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head with it, saying that the way that getting back into psychedelics could get you, or getting into psychedelics could get you into a array of people where, you know, it may not be that they're not supportive of your doing your lifestyle change or your lifestyle that you want to have, but it may be that you find yourself that, you know, like, they're not going to get involved in your life. You shouldn't get involved in their lives, and they're going to want to do other things that are...
Yeah, like growing up in Florida, the only people yeah. I could get mushrooms from were the people that dealt everything else.
Right.
So it's like if you're in one of those states where you're like, you know what, I do want to try mushrooms, and if you were, you know, some type of addict that the dealers right. you had were dealing, you know, your drug of choice, and then you're like, oh, I want to get mushrooms, is that going to push you towards... You know, going, oh, well, they're already stopping by, and
sure.
where you're starting to interact with them again, and that maybe they're trying to upsell you. You know, like, putting yourself in those circumstances can be a little risky. But overall, I think the biggest factor from what we're talking about is that intention matters when it comes to psychedelics Absolutely. Over everything else. And so if you want it to be part of your recovery, it can be, right?
Yeah.
But if you're, you know, kind of just, I'm going to try this out, or you're looking for something to kind of give you a buzz... You know,
that's not the right way to
use right. it. We've had a conversation recently about this with, you know, some friends of ours that are repeatedly using mushrooms while in recovery and
that's,
still yeah. struggling with relapse.
And so what do you know?
You know, it's like, all right, well, if we're only doing mushrooms to go out to shows, go out to parties, and there's no part of, like, the introspection, reflection, picking up things that you have to journal on and work through, and I think the chances that you get a long-term positive effect is significantly reduced. And as far as I know, that tends to be pretty well backed up by most of the smaller clinical trials they've studied so far, which is that the chances of a really negative experience and it kind of hindering your ability to move forward is relatively low, all things considered, with at least things like psilocybin, which is the most studied of probably, I think, any psychedelic we have at the moment. In terms of recent clinical studies, we don't have much coming out on acid, ibogaine, mescaline. I mean, they're just too hard to study.
There's some stuff that's coming out about LSD.
And just not as much as mushrooms, yeah. Now.
But there's some stuff. There's been a lot of studies going on about dimethyltryptamine, DMT.
Yeah, I just wonder if they're able to get to the same level or
scale. They actually had an extremely interesting
federal
study
regulation.
About DMT that I did not ever follow up on, but I heard about it on Rogan, that it was the study was they were putting two people on opposite ends of the planet in at the same time, having them ingest DMT intravenously at the same time to see if there's a chance that they can communicate. And I never followed up with the results, but I thought that it was just like the most insane idea. But it's also like I've had that thought before. Like, what? Mm-hmm. I wonder if you can communicate. This seems to be a realm. It seems to be a place.
Well, I think it was there. It might have been somewhere else with the conversation about, like, quote unquote realm mapping.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this idea of like putting someone in for an extended trip and seeing if they could kind of map out the actual parameters of where they are.
Right.
The problem is I haven't done ayahuasca or DMT in the past, and so my ability to fathom this is, you know, quite limited. And I just am not sure. The people I know who have done predominantly DMT, some people who have tried ayahuasca, they have very varying experiences based on how much of a breakthrough they had, you know, using the carts.
The carts are something that...
Right, and so...
The carts are meant to not give you the whole experience.
Exactly, and so it's like the experience varies heavily with them based on, you know, their dosage. And if I'm being honest, especially the cart style, that was one where I mainly only saw in communities that were kind of exactly what we're warning of here, right? Which is the still in heavy drug use and, you know, very little intentions. Most of them are just hitting it to hit it and try and get a high off of it.
Sure.
So asking that person versus somebody who's like, yeah, I'm going to dedicate time to go into an ayahuasca trip and go be part of a circle, you know, it's very different.
Right.
So comparing the experiences is a little bit undermining to the substance itself.
I've never done ayahuasca, but I do know the main ingredient is DMT.
Mm-hmm.
And as is with other, there are other alkaloids in it, but that's the main one, I believe. And I'm, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I have smoked 5-MeO and regular DMT.
Mm-hmm.
And or regular whatever, just called DMT, and but I have smoked the 5-MeO, and it's like it is a different place, and I think that's important. I mean, like, I think the idea of a different place came into perspective with me with ketamine, because I did do the ketamine assisted psychotherapy. I did that for about 2 years. For a year with the injections, and for about another year doing just intranasal insufflation of ketamine, and I've done it countless times, but ketamine, I think it's part of it. I mean, it's a dissociative anesthetic. It's not a psychedelic. That's important, I think, to differentiate between. But it is. The ketamine allows you to, like, go to somewhere else. I can't quite explain that, like, but it allows you to go to somewhere else. And I've always kind of described it like this. It was like mushrooms kind of people describe as, like, you take a step back and are able to look at it from, like, a third-person point of view.
Mm-hmm.
Ketamine is like taking a step back and looking at it from a third-person point of view and then going over there, like, across the room. But you yourself stay in the same place. But you in this realm are able to go across the room, and then look at you from a different perspective, right. And then from a different perspective, and then from a different perspective. It just like it allows you. I think that at least for me was what it allowed me to heal through. Was like I was able to look at myself from all these different perspectives and change accordingly. Yeah. And I think the difference there versus... Because when I was younger, I'd done a lot of mushrooms and a lot of LSD. And I'd realized a lot of things about myself. But I think that ketamine allowed me to realize the things that those things had either missed or had caused.
Right.
And it allowed me to... It also the number one thing that ketamine allowed me to do is ultimately it came to... loving myself. I was able to look at myself as another person, talk to my ego as if it was another person, and through that I've never been the type of person that like tries to purposely treat other people bad, and so dealing with my ego as if it were another person, I wasn't treating myself as bad.
Right. Yeah.
And like, I had a harder time treating myself as bad because it just didn't. It didn't make any sense to me, as I've never treated other people purposely bad. And yeah, so the ultimate way that it came to love for myself was through examination of the other substances I was using, and then forgiving myself for all of the problems that I had caused myself. And then in the same conversation, I told myself I loved myself for the first time.
Yeah, and I had a pretty similar experience with that with mushrooms. And this is kind of an interesting talking point, too, that I think for people who are, you know, to the guy who asked this question, I'm not sure what the past psychedelic use is, if he's had any, but most of the people I've talked to who have used psychedelics either while in recovery or on road to, and I think you and I, our experience seems to be very similar on this, is that when you're using psychedelics, the point of it is not that you're focusing constantly on the addiction. It's all about trying to get as close to the root cause of the problem as possible. That most of the trip functions entirely around who you are as an individual and dealing with, like, you know, these ideas of ego death and, to, you know, trying not to control every situation and kind of making peace with the things that are negative in your life at that point. And then kind of making it so that when you come back to a place of, you know, quote unquote normalcy, that there's not this aching urge to get out of, you know, this, the reality that you're in, and you have a little bit more contentment and a little more groundedness, so that you know, you're not seeking out other substances.
Well, I think that, I mean,
that experience varies from person to person as well.
I think that kind of goes on to something else we had written down in here, which was that brain scans of people on psilocybin show a temporary deactivation of the default mode network, the DMN.
Mm-hmm.
That's at least something I found. The part of the brain responsible for ego, rumination, and self-referential thinking. Disrupting the DMN may help people break free of rigid thought patterns like addiction loops. So, I mean, that's certainly the case I've found with, I mean, psychedelics. I think that to kind of go back to Sawyer's question here, I'm not sure that psychedelics, if you feel like you have your recovery figured out and you feel like you are doing well as you are going through life without substances, and you feel like you don't have any questions for yourself that you need answered, and you feel like you're fine, then psychedelics might not be something good for your recovery.
Because it's not something I would actively recommend as a blanket recommendation.
I don't think I would ever recommend. For somebody who's seeking
out, right, it's different.
If you are seeking out questions about yourself and the way that you deal with people and the way that you look at the world and the way that you, you know, operate around other souls, then, you know, yeah, you might want to, or if you're having thoughts about, you know, what am I doing in my, you know, recovery, my general life, and whatever, what am I doing in this, and I need to look at, I feel like I'm at a crossroads, and I need to look at things from a different perspective, I mean, that is a good way to do it, psychedelics, and you can't always do it, he said in this question, some say it even helped them break through blocks that nothing else could. I would not even close to disagree with that.
Right, I mean,
some of those trips, and all of almost all of the ketamine ones, because a lot of the,
I was going to say doctors. Ketamine, even though it's, you know, it's technically a slightly different class, that's its main function, right? Treatment resistant depression.
Sure, and I think post traumatic stress as well, which was what that's what I was dealing with at the time, and it got me out of the depression that I was suffering as well, and you know that's also. The depression is kind of one of those things that's just kind of, that's part of the bipolar disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But it got me out of the, like, severe rock bottom depression of just wanting to die.
Right.
It let me find love for myself.
Yeah. Yeah. And one thing, you know, I want to be very hesitant with how I say this, so that not as to have it come across as some sort of recommendation. But, again, going back to this, you know, I've been doing pretty well. but I'm very curious about it. I think for people like that, most of the psychedelic camps or, you know, ketamine camps, but most of those people fall into two, which is either you've gotten to a point of nothing is working, you can't make change, there's nowhere else to go. And for those people, you know, a lot of them are the ones who get recommended things like ketamine from, you know, actual psychiatric professionals, and some people who may find themselves hearing about Ibogaine and these other types of treatments going, look, I've tried everything, I don't know what's working. And then the other type of person falls into the camp this listener is, which is like, you know, I really am just curious about it. And if you're not in the camp of, I can't figure out anything that's functioning, if you're, you know, absolutely persistent on investigating more, start low, you know. Make sure you're around people that are extremely trustworthy. Make sure you have boundaries set up. Don't try and go headfirst into it. Don't, you know, get overwhelmed by the really kind of magical stories that you might hear from people that are doing extremely hard substances, or intense substances, rather. You know, for me, my first experience was with mushroom tea in a relatively small dose. One of the most profound experiences in my life. Not everybody may have that experience, but for me, it was, at that time, the biggest breakthrough I'd had with mental health in a very, very long time. And so, you know, if you're one of those people that's just incredibly curious and persistent, just make sure you're not going in head first. Because most of the negative side effects that are discussed, at least that I could find online, are just talking about people that have had kind of worsening symptoms of with depression, anxiety, suicidal ideation. And it's a relatively small percent. I mean, this one was 2,000 people, about 7.6%. This one was a much larger...
I think that would matter on... it would be interesting to see how those people, if they had had any issues before.
And so these are people that had pre-existing neuropsychiatric disorders. This one's on LSD, 3,500. 4% of individuals... were worsening.
It's just on straight out.
This one was. The one on 2,000 was on psilocybin. But most of these, the vast majority of those people reported that they had negative experiences, such as paranoia, after the effect, and claimed that it was one of the most difficult things they had ever been through. That was 48%.
I would imagine that people that thought it was a difficult thing to go through, like one of the most difficult things they'd ever gone through, those are some people dealing with some very deep trauma.
That was the majority. That wasn't just people who had negative side effects.
The majority said that it was the most difficult thing they'd ever gone through?
Let me re-quote that number. 39%.
Okay.
Which is still significant.
That's still significant.
And I will say that the the hard, the like most intense amount of psilocybin that I had done, that is one of the things I would classify as probably the hardest experience of my life.
It's not the hardest thing I'd ever had to do, but the most mushrooms I've ever taken was essentially reliving the hardest thing I'd ever had to do.
Right, and that was the thing for me, was that it was just this deeply, like, emotional and, you know, it, kind of the thing that was somewhat beneficial about it was also the thing that made it very difficult, is that it's a little ungrounded.
Right.
That it is that, like, slightly out of perspective, and that, like, I want to control this, but I can't. And then you have to make peace with that aspect of it. And that was incredibly difficult. And I just kept reliving it until I got that point.
Yeah. And I think that if you are someone that is going to decide to take psychedelics as a whole, any sort of them, that you are, it's not cocaine. Like, it's not like something that's like going to affect you one way. And it's like, or alcohol. You know how alcohol is going to affect you every time. That's why we drink it every day. Not us anymore, thank God.
Do you think it deals with the psychological instead of physiological?
I think it's exactly why.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's exactly why. And I think it's I think that it's important to know before going into a psychedelic experience that it is. It's at the very least extremely possible that it could be that you'll just sob the whole time, that you'll just cry your eyes out for 3 hours, and then the rest of the 3 hours that you have coming down from it if psilocybin in particular here, the rest of the 6 hours that you have on psilocybin are going to be spent like thinking about like just sad shit.
Liquid reflection.
Yeah, liquid reflection.
It's a brutal beer.
But when I just know from my own experience, when I had that trip of my, I've had four trips that I can remember on psilocybin that were some of the worst experiences of my life.
Yeah.
And one of them, the very first time I did it, I did way too much. I ate way too many. And I just thought about my kid and the relationship that had just ended. Cause it was like, I was young still. I was probably 21, 20,
right.
Something like that. So the relationship had just ended between me and her, and like the kid was, you know, gone. And yep. So it was just like, it was just, and for, I'm going to clear that up, by the way. We gave him up for adoption. I did not, the kid is not dead, nor did we kill him, nor did I, am I a deadbeat dad.
Right.
So just should clarify that. But that's another, I could have brought that up in my fucking trauma battle the other day. Did we do that? I think I did.
Yeah, unexpected pregnancy.
Right, okay, there's more ways that we could count that, but we'll leave it at that. But,
yeah, I think part of it, too, with the, when it comes to the negative experiences, I heard this a lot around the psychedelic and kind of pseudo-spiritual community, was that all negative experiences led back to the inability to deal with it.
Right.
And I think it's important to comment that isn't all of them. Some people just don't react well to these substances. But I think it does make up a large chunk of them, which is like, it's this kind of reliving shit that you just can't deal with yet. And I mean, that was I didn't have that just with psychedelics. I had that with therapy as well. You know, I had a therapist in college, reopened some shit, and, you know, started asking me questions. And I was at a period in life where I had to be wearing a bunch of different hats to get by, and working full time and in school and playing rugby and in the Marine Corps officers program, and just busting my ass constantly. And then we reopened this and I fell apart and I was like, I can't deal with this right now. And it kind of sent me on like a really bad spiral for a while, right? Because I was so emotionally vulnerable and I was like, I can't molt this shell yet. I need this shell for right now. And a lot of times that's what ego is. Ego is that it's your defense mechanisms. It's your ability to cope. It's your ability to keep your identity intact. Is. Right. It's this kind of survival-based mechanism. That's why you learn it young.
You need ego. That's why like the idea of ego death is kind of a problem.
Well, and it's like understanding that it is a shell. Like, you molt it. You know, you may find a point in your life when you're able to kind of shed it. But it's going to grow back.
Right,
and you're going to have to deal with it again.
That's the idea of the perma-trip thing, is the people whose egos do not grow back, people whose egos stay in the trip. That's the idea of what a perma-trip is.
I don't like that idea.
No, it's frightening as fuck. But, like, it's also, like, something that takes, like, doing... Number one, you have to have, like, a... In my opinion, I think you have to have a bad trip in order to stay there.
Mm-hmm.
And number two... You have to do it a lot, and in a the only person that I know
a lot of people who claim to have been in that, and they were some of the most egotistical people I've ever met.
Yeah, those people are
incredibly rigid, incapable of conversation.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Could never have always above the kind of strata of everyone else, so that you couldn't ever make. You know, they wouldn't bring themselves down to that low. Oh, you just got to figure it out,
man. I say that as someone who used to be like that. Those people are losers.
Mm-hmm.
And. But I think it's important to know two things with psychedelics. One, that being that I just mentioned the perma-trip thing, is that that's not really that likely. And that's not really something that happens to everybody. It happens to somebody, at least not everybody that takes it. It's definitely not something that happens to everybody that takes drugs.
No.
Especially psychedelics. But I think that it's important with... When you go into, if you have never taken psychedelics before, when you go into it, and you take the substance, and it starts to make its effect on you, don't fight it.
Yeah, be around people you care about.
No. Even if you're alone, if you're alone.
I wouldn't do that the first couple times.
No, yeah. I wouldn't do psilocybin alone or acid alone for the first time.
Right.
But when the trip starts to come and it starts to really like take over your mind, you're getting places where you didn't know you'd go, and you're starting to, you know, be in weird places, you know, don't fight that. Mm-hmm. And let your brain go there, and you will find a way to deal with these things.
Yeah.
And you know, all the answers are up there if you let them be.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes the answers that are presented are not good answers.
Or it's a tool. The answer you get is, oh, this is the thing I need to start doing to fix it. And then it's a several year process of,
sure,
you know, working back, which you talked about.
I think
earlier.
That's there's danger in that, though, because there's danger in overuse of these substances.
Well, I'm not saying that, but like the substance itself is the
uses.
Tool.
Yeah,
but that, like, okay, you go to these places, like, sometimes it's not, the answer is like, all right, well, I'm having these issues with my relationships or with my trauma because I haven't been able to deal with this. And then when you come out of that trip, that's when you start dealing with it, right? It's like,
right,
that's when you start putting all of this work into practice. And at least in my belief, there's two things everybody should understand going in, which one plays off of what you said. And it's just that nobody knows your experience. You
right.
should be around people you trust. Everybody's unique. Don't expect a certain outcome from it, because you're going to end up super rigid and then very uncomfortable with, you know, these places you might go.
Right. And also you may expect something different than you're going to get and may not like what you get.
Exactly. And then, you know, you're in a kind of panic mode. And the second thing is that it's not always a tangible effect. Sometimes, at least in my experience, some of the most beneficial aspects I had of doing the smaller trips, this also seems to be consistent with what I've seen about microdosing, which is kind of these boosts in moods, slight behavioral changes,
sure,
allowing like for, you know, these different outcomes for increases in, you know, life view, self-regard, so on and so forth. But especially on slightly more intense trips, I think it's incredibly important to try and have tangible outcomes of like, what did I learn here? What thing did I go through?
Right.
And being able to journal about it during or after the experience, so that it's not just a trip and then everything gets lost in the haze.
Because it will.
I've seen a lot of people do
it
that.
It will.
Who did mushrooms 1,000 times.
I've done mushrooms so many times.
And never told me. They could never say one thing it helped them with.
Right.
They'd be like, I just love the world.
At a certain point, did start writing stuff down. Mm-hmm. But I, for a little while, was just tripping alone. Or not, just tripping without that. And, like, mm-hmm. was learning so much shit, and then it would be, like, gone the next day. Because you just forget it. You just forget it. And it's you know, it sucks, and you'll remember all these crazy things, and you also, half the time, if you write, half the stuff that you write down doesn't make sense the next day.
No.
I couldn't tell you how many psychedelic notes I have that are like, what the fuck was I even mm-hmm. talking about? I think I read one of them on here on like episode 2 or 3.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like, it's just like stuff like, what the fuck is happening? Because, you know, your brain is, you can't, it's like, I used to have this problem on ketamine when I would write on ketamine. Like, my brain was moving faster than the pen could. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like, I could never get anything logical down. Because
yeah.
I would have 6 thoughts by the time
you
the first
read
word
it
was written.
Did I learn a different language?
Yeah.
What the fuck is
yeah.
this?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I can tell when I've been writing on ketamine, like, based on my handwriting, because it gets different.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, yeah. For anybody that would like to, I think we'll get off the topic now and go on to our next segment here. But if for anybody that is maybe on the fence about psychedelics, psilocybin and whatnot, psychedelics really as a whole, the book How to Change Your Mind by Michael Pollan, and I believe it's also a Netflix miniseries, docuseries
cool.
thing. Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind is a powerful book. It brings a whole different perspective on the way of psychedelics, because Michael Pollan was a person that had never used psychedelics, but was dealing with depression, and then had heard about psilocybin and experimented with it and found incredible uses with it, and he was one of the type of people that did write everything down and did have experiences that he can remember, and he recorded himself, I believe, and like all sorts of stuff, and like it really is a incredibly interesting book, but also docuseries. So anybody that is interested in maybe taking their questions, maybe Sawyer here, a step further, but doesn't want maybe to dive in quite yet, Michael Pollan's How to Change Your Mind, great book.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go ahead and we'll get into Clean But Still a Mess here. Yeah, Jay, why don't you go ahead and start with that?
Alright. Here we go. So I just wrote down, guess what, dog? Because guess what? It's the same shit as it's been the last 4 fucking weeks. I'm trying to figure out how to function as an adult when it comes to sleeping, cleaning my goddamn apartment, getting this fucking kitchen fixed finally, setting up all the appointments. I got charged fucking $90 for a missed appointment the other week.
Oh, boy.
And then these bastards, dog. These fucking bastards. Colorado Realty and Property Management. Fuck you, dude. Sue me for slander. These bastards set up an appointment.
Don't sue the podcast.
Don't sue the podcast. Sue me personally. I dare you. Yeah. I dare you. I know where your office is. I don't mean there's a threat, just for legal purposes. But these guys said, what time are you available? I booked an appointment. Hey, man, 4 to 6. Okay. Your appointment slot is booked for 2 to 4. No, I am not available 2 to 4. Please don't charge me. Move it a different day. These bastards, don't move it a different day. Then the day of, I get an email saying at fucking like 11 a.m., your appointment is scheduled for an hour from now. I'm like, what? Like, I'm not available. I got to leave. And so, of course, they show up to my house. Your boy's in the shadow realm. Sure. I had drifted off. I did not wake up. Jesus. And then they came banging on the door. And then I got a $92 charge for it. And I, on one hand, go, you know what?
Don't pay it.
It's too late. I paid it.
Fuck.
Wow. On one hand, I go, you know what? I did prolong this issue for quite some time.
Steal something from their office that's worth $92.
I can't get in. They keep the door locked.
Well, you can't do that now. I just mentioned on the podcast. They'd know it was you. But, you know.
On an unrelated matter, if anyone has lock-picking skills, let your boy know.
I'll tell you something off air.
Yeah, these son of a bitches, dude. They keep getting me. And the problem is I, like I said, I can't blame them because it's like, I'm just bad at adulting. I could have made myself available had I mentally prepared for that. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Just do better.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks. Thanks, all wise one.
I mean,
be better.
No, okay. I don't mean. Okay, yeah, fair enough. But I mean, be better. When you make a mistake, just count that as that and move forward. And then it's like, but next time, don't make that mistake.
I'm on try 73 here, dog.
Yeah, no, what point I'm trying. Is, I'm trying.
When do we get to the breakthrough realm? Well, it'll come one of these days. I'm sure of it.
Sure,
maybe. We'll figure something out.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe not.
Alright. Playing off our initial discussion topic, let's hear yours.
Mine was Bicycle Day 2025. I mentioned at the top of the podcast I'd share with what my bicycle day was. I had a fantastic bicycle day.
Very athletic.
It was, yes, I rode 2 bikes. And I went to the Rockies game with my girlfriend while on a bike.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fucking so much fun, dude. I love baseball. I love baseball games. That was the most fun I've ever had at a baseball game.
Just did you let you bring the bike into the stadium?
Okay, I have to share with everybody. The bike, the bike is actually 2 bikes, meaning 2 doses of LSD.
Nice.
Sorry. Whatever. Bill W. did it, too.
Bill W.?
The founder of AA.
Oh, shit?
Yeah. Bill W.'s quote-unquote like psychic breakthrough, whatever he called it, spiritual breakthrough, was on an LSD experience.
That's insane.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that. No, but that is true.
I think we skipped that. We didn't mention that, but there is 12-step groups like psychedelics and recovery.
Yeah, psychedelics and recovery.
That makes sense.
That now exists as an offshoot of AA and NA. I've never been to a meeting for psychedelics and recovery. I might actually look into that now that I know that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And because like I can't really deal with the AANA stuff because it's just the all or nothing approach to it doesn't really rub the right way with me. Mm-hmm. I think that it works well. It works well for people that it works well for, but like for me, it never worked. I was never able to make that work, to just have nothing except for coffee and cigarettes.
Right.
I took 2 doses of acid with my girlfriend, and we went to the Rockies game, and it was like, it was so much fun. Like, we just sat there. We sat there the whole time and, like, just laughed the whole time for all of the baseball game. I just made fun of people and, like, we'd see a guy who's playing baseball and just, like, I'd basically be the commentator as if it was on TV, but I would just be making fun of him. And
did you do any of the hey, bada, bada, hey?
No, but at one point in time, I did the Rockies. By the way, the Rockies are potentially, Jay, this is not a fake fact here. This is not a fake stat. The Rockies are on pace, as are the Chicago White Sox, by the way,
mm-hmm,
to be the worst team in the history of Major League Baseball since the live ball era began, which was 1901, I believe.
Well, shout out to them for sucking ass, because tickets are like $7 right now.
It's great. I'm fine. $4 now.
$4?
Yeah. The other day I saw tickets for $4 for this upcoming week.
That's awesome.
I'm going this week, too.
What day is it?
I think they're back on the 25th and 26th. It might be the 26th. I forget. But okay, they're back for 3 weeks.
If we go, I'm going to walk. I don't think I'm going to take a bike there.
That's probably a good idea. But yeah, no, my girlfriend and I, we just laughed for 3 hours straight. My jaw was hurting. I clench pretty bad on acid,
mm-hmm,
but like the part of my jaw that's like where you flex cause you're laughing hurt like the whole day after that. Cause it was just, we were just laughing at people to the point where we were like, we may have, like, fake plotted a murder.
Good Lord.
Just because, like, that's my sense of humor. Just like, hey, it was like we weren't actually going to do this, but there was this couple at the train stop, and there were four of us total, two couples at the trains, at this one train stop where we had to transfer trains. And I said, I went over to Magdalene, and I was like, babe, there's another couple. And she's like, yeah. Like, we may have to kill them. And she just fucking lost her mind. She fucking just started cracking up. And so I had to keep going with that, of course. I had to keep driving that. And so I kept on saying, like, they don't know that we're planning on killing them. Like, and just kept on driving it, like, just farther with it. And eventually they got off on the same stop as we did. And I was like, babe, this is our chance. And they were like walking in the same direction as us, and I was like, babe, this is our chance. And so we killed him. Just kidding. In the case that couple went missing.
I laughed quite a lot on psychedelics. If you told me that, I would literally shit myself. I'd be like, don't fucking kill him, dude. Please don't kill him. I'd be terrified. I'd be crying in the corner. No, dude, there's people. I'd freak out. I get so paranoid.
It was so funny, dude. It was so funny. We had such a great time. And then I almost caught a ball, but she had just handed me some dessert nachos that is for sale now at Coors Field above Section 134. Just so you know, people. But dessert nachos, they were really good. She had just handed them to me, and a ball came like within. If I had got up and moved back four rows, I could have caught it. But I was like, basically, just made sure it wasn't gonna hit her.
Yeah.
And then I just went back to my nacho stand. Yeah. I was just like, I have like
fully invested.
I'm fine, dude. I don't care. Yeah. Just gotta make sure it doesn't hit her.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. So that was it. But
not that obviously that would be bad, but
what?
That'd be a fun story.
Bicycle day, get hit by we were worried about that.
Just both on acid, get hit by a fucking pop fly. You just sitting there with dessert nachos waiting for paramedics to come up, glasses on. Hey, man.
Yeah, man. She
I don't know what happened, man.
I was eating nachos. Mm-hmm. It was pretty funny. There was one point in time, tell me if I said this, my memory is terrible, but the Rockies were doing terrible.
You commented them being the worst team.
I didn't mention this part. At one point in time, I did yell out after they made a second straight error. I did yell, play better baseball. And they started playing better baseball.
They listened?
They did.
Maybe it was that psychedelic communication.
They almost won. They were down at this point in time. I believe they were down like 12-2.
Was this a baseball game?
In a baseball game, yes.
God damn.
And they came back, and it was 12-11. They struck out with a runner on third, down one.
That's brutal.
Brutal. The umpire, that guy must have got the fuck out of that place so fast. Because, I would. There's 24,000 people there. And... which, by the way, is insane for how bad the Rockies are that there are still 24,000 people.
When tickets are $5.
Mine weren't. I mean, you get better seats. You can get good seats for cheap. It's pretty sweet.
How much did you pay?
I think I bought two tickets and it was $65. But it was no, I was sitting right behind. I was sitting like on third base.
A few
prime,
rows up.
Prime foul ball territory. And obviously, we almost got a couple of those. Yeah, I love baseball. I want to go. If you want to just go catch a game, you can go buy Rock Pile tickets for $4. But if you want to if you like baseball, then you want to buy good seats sometimes. And so I bought good seats.
Fair point.
And dude. $30 for good seats?
Yeah.
That's fucking great.
Good seats at a fucking Broncos game is probably $390.
Good seats at a Broncos game are $400. No, Doc, I checked the Broncos tickets the other day. Green Bay Packers, Vivid seats. How much do you think the least expensive ticket is?
I don't know what a Vivid is.
Vivid seats is an app that that should sponsor
cheapest?
Us.
Cheapest? I'm going to go $175.
$400. Yeah, for Green Bay Packers against the Broncos in January.
God damn.
Yeah, like the last game of the season. It's $400. Yeah.
God damn.
Insane. That is what we are clean but still a mess for this week.
Mm-hmm.
This did remind
me of something that I wanted to mention earlier when we were talking about psychedelics still. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is that for those interested in trying some of the, or at least exploring the ideas of positive benefits of psychedelics, look into things like holotropic or transcendental breathing.
Sure.
And some of these other breathing exercises. I was a personal trainer for a guy in Florida who was part of the National Native American Shamanic Society, and he did guided trips with people. And it was one of the things he recommended to me. And it was something he had learned from his mentor. And he talked about, I don't remember the name of the scientist who helped study acid in the 60s and 70s.
Albert Hofmann.
And, wanted to help develop an alternative route.
Oh, in the
60s route.
And 70s? Probably Timothy Leary.
And he was supposed to be, I think, he said had the most time doing guided trips with acid.
That may not be Timothy Leary.
But afterwards, wanted to find a way for people to have that experience and benefits without having the substance available to them.
Oh, that is.
And help develop holotropic breathing.
I'm almost positive that's
so. So, if you're interested in psychedelic use, that is a affordable and accessible alternative that you can try. Very easy to control if you're, you know, feeling uncomfortable at any point. There are guided meditations online if you just look up holotropic breathing. And that surely falls under the act of staying within recovery.
Sure. You know, if you have $10 more dollars than that, that's all a hit of acid costs.
Fair play.
But no, do the breathing first. Check that out. Anyway, we are going to go ahead and get into our next segment here. We're going to do... I think we'll probably actually be just going right into the song of the week. And, Jay, what do you have for your song of the week?
I got a little Midwest emo for you, Doug. I got SPS by Hot Mulligan.
Okay.
It has been a jammer lately. Kind of talks about, you know, essentially, for lack of a better word, just being a little bit of a piece of shit. And the struggles of life that come with that. Essentially dealing with, like, the active addiction points in life. Reminds me a little bit of both where I was and also, in some ways, mentally where I'm at. And it's not like some of the other songs where there's kind of an uplifting message to it or, you know, some act of, like, overcoming. This is kind of just about the struggles of those periods of life, but there are times when that, to me, feels a little comforting. Especially just because, like, you know, when you find music that's about it and it carries the emotional thing where you're like, all right, someone else gets it. You know what I mean? That kind of commiseration or the feeling understood. So it's been a jammer for me as of lately. What have you been listening to?
That's pretty great. I have not listened to that song, but I like the name Hot Mulligan. That's a cool band.
Yeah, Hot Mulligan slaps, Doug.
The Midwest emo that I'm familiar with goes all the way back to... it'd be Hawthorne Heights was one of the...
Hawthorne Heights is sick, but I don't consider them Midwest emo. I think it's just
from
emo.
They're Ohio.
It's Midwest emo isn't about the actual location. Midwest what? Emo... Midwest... You fucking idiot. That's what you think it is.
That's fucking retarded.
It's not like East Coast rap, West Coast rap. Midwest emo is like a style of... It's essentially like... emo song. It's
that's
like
fucking retarded.
Hawthorne Heights over acoustic instead of, like, you know, it's a way retarded. Slower pace of the actual, like, instrumental.
Why is it called Midwest emo?
I don't probably because it started in the Midwest. I don't okay. know, but it's well, not about where the emo comes from.
That's fucking stupid.
Get Midwest emo from literally anywhere. It's about, like, the whole, like, playing an acoustic and then scream vocals over the top of it. It's awesome. I love
I would
it.
I hate that.
Do you remember Shaddy's music?
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah, I hated that.
Okay, I love it.
I hate it so much.
Check out Hot Mulligan, guys. It's awesome.
Yeah, shout out Shadrach.
The dog.
But, okay. My song of the week, and this, it has nothing to do with recovery or anything like that. It's just I was listening to... Well, actually, if I'm being honest, my girlfriend was listening to this song the other day, and I was like, holy shit, this is my favorite Led Zeppelin song. And she said, this is my favorite Led Zeppelin song. And that was the moment I knew I was in love. Mm. Well, I knew I was in love before that. But you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, that's how you know it's real. And that song is How Many More Times by Led Zeppelin. And it's a fucking jam.
What is that from? Do you know what album?
Led Zeppelin 1. Just Led Zeppelin. It's the 10th song on Led Zeppelin. Yeah. It's a fucking jam, dude. And it's... I Definitely my favorite Led Zeppelin song. And... maybe one of Led Zeppelin being Led Zeppelin is one of the greatest bands of all time. You can say what you will about them. I know some people will.
What the fuck does that mean?
But their music is fucking incredible.
What did you just say?
Some people will call them pedophiles.
Oh, is that
and
what
they mean? I don't think that they're wrong about that. I think it was also the 70s and they were fucking like 14-year-old girls, but
I mean, to, as I've gotten older, as much as, so I asked because I never ended up getting into their other music, but the first album I ever got was, you know, like my dad got me an iPod when I was 7, mm-hmm. and he got me Mothership Disc 1 and Mothership Disc 2. Nice. And loaded that up, and then a bunch of like Greatest Pink Floyd, and yeah, Steve Vai, Stevie Ray Vaughan, a bunch of cool shit. But
your dad had good taste.
Yeah, Deep Purple. But Deep Purple. Oh, and Dream Theater. Shout out Dream Theater. I fucking love their music. But as I've gotten older, when I was young, because I grew up on that, I loved rock and roll, mm-hmm. and the idea of being a rock and roll star. Mm-hmm. And as I've gotten older, I'm like, dude, what a fucking awful life. I mean, I'm sure to some people that is an incredible amount of fun, but it's just like an obscene amount of drugs and just, it's literally, it's people who are 35 years old and they're 12. You know what I mean?
Most of them don't make it that far.
Right.
Do you know what the average age of people that are involved in rock and roll that have made it as musicians, do you know what the average age it is that people die at?
No.
You could guess.
27.
Yes. It's average. It's the average age that a famous musician dies at. I believe that's true. It's like 27, 28. It's not long.
No.
This is a burn hot lifestyle.
Yeah, and it looks brutal. Yeah. And a lot of times it's like, you know, especially now is more and more like little documentaries are coming out and stories about.
Yeah. And I believe that statistic is for, I was shown it in some history of rock and roll class in college, but I believe that is for musicians, rock and roll musicians. No, I believe it's for musicians as a whole who have made it like successfully and then have also passed. Mm. I think those are, and it's like the average age of the those who have died is 27.
I'm sure specifically for rock and roll, it's probably hard because I mean just. Longer like I said, yeah. I mean, the lifestyle of those people was crazy. Insane.
It's crazy.
I thought my dad was crazy because they played on the back of like a pickup truck at a chili cook-off.
Sure.
I was like, dude, he's shredding.
That's rock and roll, dude. That's rock and roll as it gets.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, Led Zeppelin, kick-ass band, potentially pedophiles.
I got to ask since we're on the topic. What do you think of Greta Van Fleet?
That's not good. That's not a good thing, by the way.
No.
Not potentially.
Bad. Bad. Very bad.
Bad.
Yeah, we're not a fan of that.
No.
What do you think of Greta Van Fleet? Cheap knockoffs?
No, not cheap knockoffs. Not cheap knockoffs. It would be cheap knockoffs if the kid did not sound like that. And because the kid fucking has a voice from the angels, dude.
Yeah, he does.
He's so good. I don't know his name.
No, me neither.
But he, that guy has a voice. I mean, look, Robert Plant is the original of that voice, but that kid is like the 2.0 of that voice. And it's maybe not, he might not be, he's not better, but like that is like the, like it's like the, it's like the, it's Robert Plant if he had heard Robert Plant sing.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I feel about that. I don't think they're anywhere near as good as Led Zeppelin. Their music on average is like, they have a couple of really good songs, obviously. On their first album was a great album. But as I haven't listened to much of them over the past few years. I've been in the bluegrass phase.
I've listened to a couple albums from them, and they have some solid music. I think part of that insane lifestyle though is that it produces really raw music, like you know, and just this. I mean, it was the same reason that, you know, the Beatles had some insane songwriting, was just psychedelic use and like you know, just living this lifestyle that produces these kind of extremes, highs, lows, and insight, and
I mean, if you
retrospect,
look at
and
my favorite artist, Billy Strings, his past is like fucking
brutal.
Ups, downs, left, rights, fucking brutal shit, and just like, you know, and that's why like that's why he's my favorite artist, because I can relate to his life,
mm-hmm.
at least maybe not directly, but like, I can relate, and not what it is now, because I can't relate to being a fucking superstar musician at this point.
No.
But I definitely won't, because I'm not gonna. I can't play guitar like that.
Right.
But
you can play cowbell.
I could play the. Oh, I should ask Billy.
Yeah, I should play cowbell.
Hey Billy, if you're listening to this, can I play cowbell with the band once at Red Rocks or something?
Just a couple times.
That'd be sick. Just once, twice.
Bring you like a little thing of cava or something.
Yeah,
Yeah, dude.
Absolutely.
It'll be a good time.
It'd be sweet. Mm-hmm. Anyway, moving on from there.
Can I be the guy that stomps his foot in the background?
Yeah, they need one of those guys. I think they need one of those guys.
Cool, I'll step in and replace.
Sweet. So that really does it for this week's episode.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't mention this at the top, but we should mention it at the top of every episode, and we're going to mention it at the end of this one. Follow our Instagram. Reach out to us, whether it be through DM, and that is at Malfunction Junction Podcast. Or if you would like to have your question read on there, or some other form of game that we're playing, reach out to us at malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com. We hope you enjoyed the other Wednesday's episode, which was our first trauma battle. There will be more to come of those episodes if you enjoyed that. If you enjoyed me wiping the floor with Jay.
Fuck you, loser. Point system was rigged.
The point system may have been rigged.
I want to rejudge.
That's fine.
I don't care that I lost. I care that it was 38-19.
Yeah.
I got bodied. That was brutal.
Well, I had a power play on the end.
I had a
15-point power play at the end.
That was rough.
Yeah. But we will be releasing those episodes moving forward on Patreon whenever we can get those going. We are taking... what do we want to call it? Applications for trauma battle. If you think that you've had a fucked up life and you want to compare it to another addict's, send us an email at malfunctionjunctionpodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, we'll get you in here, dog.
We'll get you in here. Don't worry about that. One way or another, we can figure it out whether you phone call in or whatever, dude. We'll have you battle. We'll have you judged. And we'll tell you if your life's been really that bad or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's up to us.
We are going to absolutely in every way try and quantify the amount of trauma you've been through.
Yes. We're going to leave that to a points total. And if it's not as much as the other addicts, then we're going to tell you that you lose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a shame. That's too bad.
Yeah, I was going to be sad yesterday and today.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remembered that you had it twice as bad as I did.
Literally twice as bad.
Yes. And I was happy.
Yeah, good.
Sure. I was like, thank fucking God.
And I was happy that I won. So it's a win-win. It's a win-win. You cannot lose by playing trauma battle.
No. You're either less fucked up or you win. It's awesome. It's a great system.
Sweet. Well, anyway, the last thing I'll mention here before we get out of here is we are going to be continuing to release episodes weekly on Saturday. Mm-hmm. We will, when we have those extra trauma battle episodes or any other sort of game that we're going to do,
probably
some sort of mini series, whatever it's going to be, those will be announced where they'll be released, but the trauma battle will always be released on Patreon moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead and go follow that Patreon as
well. Get it while it's free.
That is in the bio here as well, the bio of the show, the link to that. Go get it while it's free, because right now it's free, but only for a limited time. So you should do that if you want to hear whose life is worse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you got anything else before we get out of here?
Stay sober, stay classy.
Hell yeah. All right, everybody. You guys have a great night.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.